WBZ H910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Another congressional all-nighter. This time, it's the House's turn to stay up debating the massive spending bill President Trump has told Republican leader he wants passed by the 4th of July, despite no Democratic support from lawmakers like Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
This disgusting abomination, the GOP tax scam that guts Medicaid, rips food from the mouths of children, seniors, and veterans, and rewards billionaires with massive tax breaks.
Republicans say the bill only targets waste and fraud, the Congressional Budget Office predicting it will add trillions to the national debt over the next decade. Guilty plea for Brian Koberger, who changed his plea and admitted in court he killed four University of Idaho students 2.5 years ago. He'll get life in prison. Sean Combs ordered held without bail in his sentencing after his conviction on two lesser charges in his trial. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Big Brother Season 27 is about to drop, but there is an exciting new twist, according to the people who created said twist. Variety says three contestants from previous seasons will drop by every Friday night to analyze the sitch. Other highlights for this coming season will include a mystery hotel theme and a living room with chess guardians, whatever that means. Season 27 of Big Brother drops July 10th on CBS. In other Season 27 news, the creators of South Park are not happy about the delay in their latest season reaching viewers. Trey Parker and Matt Stone are blaming the Paramount merger with Skydance for the long wait between seasons. Season 26 finished 2 years ago. A recent update was that the new season would drop July 9, but that has been pushed back again to July 27. Just guessing, we will see Parker and Stone's frustration with the networks in a South Park episode in the near future. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Bucks release another player. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Basketball, the Bucks have waived backup center Chris Livingston after just 2 years with the team. Livingston, drafted by the Bucks in 2023, and was the highest paid player taken in the second round of the NBA draft. The move seen as a way for the team to get under the salary cap. Baseball, the Brewers face the Mets tonight in New York with a series win on the line. Last night, the Crew lost to the Mets 7-3 after rookie Jacob Mizorowski gave up a grand slam in the second inning. Manager Pat Murphy.
He learned his lesson. He's ticked about it. Even some of his sequencing he's ticked about. He's just really in a good spot in that, darn it, why did this happen? You know what I mean? Like, I could have. And it's like, he can see it. There's just a really fine line between being dominant and being just okay. And, I'm certain he'll learn from it.
The Brewers won game one of yesterday's doubleheader, 7-2. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, join us next time. Dan Schaefer, political editor at Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulation Area, will be here to update us live on the latest of the state budget and another holiday edition of What's Worse. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Any showers and storms ending. We'll see mostly clear to partly cloudy skies, but some patchy fog will be forming. Light winds at morning lows in the upper 50s. After the foggy start, we'll see quite a bit of sunshine with highs in the low to mid 80s. It's 66 at our studios.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, I put another candle on the old birthday cake, and I do mean old, plus Sherita Booker, Chad Holmes, Todd Alba, and Sean O'Malley.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Stephanie Hoff along with you on a Thursday. This is the Midwest Farm Report. We're gearing up for the 4th of July weekend, and the weather isn't too shabby, at least to kick things off today. We are looking at a whirlwind of heat and thunderstorms throughout the weekend around the state. Your forecast today in south central Wisconsin, partly cloudy with afternoon showers or thunderstorms, highs in the upper 80s. Moving east toward the lakeshore, the chance of rain is less with a stray shower possible, except for a few afternoon clouds, mainly sunny in Milwaukee. Heading north to Green Bay, the rain chance slows down, but so do the temps with highs in the low 80s. The other side of the state is hot with highs in the low 90s, a stray shower possible for the Eau Claire area. We'll talk more about the weather's impact on agriculture this morning. Cody Koster will join us live from EverEgg. He's focused on milk production. We've also got a cranberry update coming your way.
Family reunions, anniversaries, neighborhood get-togethers, whatever event you're planning, incorporate a little Bavaria sausage flavor in your event. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke, I wouldn't steer you wrong. I'll tell you what, Bavaria sausage can give you just what you're looking for when it comes to impressing your guests with fantastic flavor and old world recipes. And things are always changing at Bavaria Sausage, so you want to check back often. Their website's fantastic, BavariaSausage.com, making it easy for you to get the products you're looking for. Or better yet, visit face-to-face in the store, corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrota Road in Fitchburg. Monday through Friday, 9 until 7. Saturday, 9 until 1. No matter what your celebration is, Scott and the crew will work towards making sure it's a success. Looking for something special or maybe bigger volumes? That's where you want to contact Scott and Lisa and let them know what you're looking for. BavariaSausage.com. You stop by, they'll make the difference.
Wisconsin is well known for having the largest farmers market in the country right here in Madison. Now the Food Finance Institute is looking to help all these organic growers with their new program, Naturally Wisconsin. From the southern end of the world's longest barn, I'm Ben Jarbo, and Jamie Valenti Jordan is the Food Brand Program Manager with FFI. He is here to give a look into this new program that aims to get Wisconsin's organic products the recognition they deserve.
Naturally Wisconsin is part of a larger organization called Naturally Network. Naturally Network is a kind of an expression of this need to partner together in order to support the natural products industry, most commonly in the food industry, honestly. And so what Naturally Wisconsin is intended to be is an opportunity for us to bring all of the resources that are here to support both our farmers and our entire supply chain through the natural products ecosystem to help us to be better partners, better business partners, by making these one-on-one relationships and understanding each other as people above and beyond our businesses that we represent alone.
Well, for sure. And when you look at it, what was the main reasoning for Wisconsin? Is this something that you have been looking at implementing into Wisconsin for a while? Or is it something that just kind of fell into your lap and jumped on it?
So I think that, you know, the Food Finance Institute that had with Sarah Larson at the head, before I even started with them, investigated what it would take to bring Naturally Wisconsin to life. The reason why they did that is both Naturally Minnesota and Naturally Chicago have had a lot of success with supporting their local ecosystem, primarily centered around bringing new products to market and taking those market introductions and making them more and more successful. So in having that in our adjacent geographies, it became a lot more apparent that we needed to do the same here in Wisconsin, because frankly, we have a lot to offer, and we already do, to the food industry in the natural product sector.
And could you give some insight into the types of businesses that would be partaking and what exactly they do in this natural Wisconsin space?
Absolutely. So within our space, of course, we have brands. That's the most commonly recognized group, but it's not just emerging brands, not just established brands. It's also our supply chain up and downstream. So that's going to be inclusive of our agricultural sector, our agricultural supply, our ag tech, but also our ingredient suppliers that are going to process those materials, our packaging and equipment suppliers that are going to be a part of that as well, all the way through to our service providers, those that specialize in the food industry with respect to, working on legal or marketing as well. We've also got our government and academic institutions as well that we are bringing to the table with this. And really what the purpose of Naturally Wisconsin is to recognize all the different support structures and systems that we have in place in the state of Wisconsin to support our producers and make sure that they're aware of all the programs that we have and that we're providing the optimum support for them to make them successful. Everybody's got a slightly different business model in how they are bringing their products to market and how they are different than the next group over. And so what we want to do is recognize those pieces of individuality and make sure that we are supporting them and making them successful in, frankly, becoming a profitable business in the food industry.
So would you say the end goal is to, one, make sure these people are able to network with others that are kind of adjacent to them, as you were saying, as well as just spread how good Wisconsin products are to the rest of the U.S.?
Absolutely. So, exactly. There's a twofold focus here. One is to build within Wisconsin to make people more successful on their own, but then also to elevate to a national level and highlight how great Wisconsin is and our producers and our people are, that then allow us to compete on a more national scale than we would normally.
How is this Naturally Wisconsin funded?
For right now, this is being produced as a program of the Food Finance Institute, and so we are doing this as part of our obligation to build a more sustainable Wisconsin food ecosystem. That is how we're getting that funded through grants. It will be additionally funded through industry sponsors. We're going to remain authentic. We will get sponsors. I've got a couple of folks that are already interested at the moment. But I want to make sure that they understand kind of what it is that we actually want to deliver with this program before we start asking for money. So every other Naturally program out there has to also fund their executive director and all of their staff. Because of the way we are networking this, the way that we're resourcing this program through FFI, we don't have to necessarily raise our salaries, which is great. We can keep all of the money focused on programming and building value here in Wisconsin as opposed to paying somebody's salary.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add about this new edition of Naturally Wisconsin and any more about what it does or just things that you want people to know about it?
Honestly, I want people to have a look at it and see if it's the right fit for some of the things that they may be working on. So go to naturallywisconsin.org, check us out, see whether or not this is even remotely up your alley. And if it is, come check us out. And maybe you can't make the next event or the event after that. That's fine. We're going to be rotating all across Wisconsin. This is not a Madison-Milwaukee organization. This is one that we're going to go to Green Bay, Kenosha, Platteville, Eau Claire, Stevens Point, Beaver Dam. We're going to float all over the state, figure out where people want us to be. Not that we're going to necessarily just choose one group or one area, but we do want to necessarily engage all of Wisconsin. This is Naturally Wisconsin, not Naturally Madison or Naturally Milwaukee. And we recognize that our ecosystem is broader than just what happens in those two cities. So in that respect, yeah, definitely come check us out at an event if you can make it. There will be a lot of networking. There will be some light programming, but we're going to focus on making sure that everybody has time to meet everybody in the room and find those relationships and build those values where they can be helpful to our efforts that we're working on outside the room.
And this isn't just for only small businesses or large businesses. This is for anyone within that common goal, right?
Absolutely. So if you've got a small farm that you run on the side and you're looking at maybe trying to go full-time with it or something like that, absolutely, come hang out with us. We'll be happy to share our experiences with people who have done that recently, and can tell you about some of the shortcuts you can make or, you know, perhaps certain skill sets you need to be prepared to leverage. If you don't have those already, you need to figure out how to resource those. If you don't like mucking out stalls, well, you know, we need to talk about what the future looks like for you and make sure that that's something that you actually want to go do. If you're at a large organization and, you know, maybe you're not an executive, maybe you're working on the line, happy to chat with you and hear what you have to say about how the industry's behaving. I'm not working on that line. I don't have your perspective, and I would love to hear from folks who do have that, and I know that our members would as well, because all of us are part of this ecosystem, whether they be at the in the boardroom, on the line, you know, figuring out how to get kids to events in between having to milk the cows. I get it. We've been, like, I get that that's what our life is, and we need all those perspectives in the room if we're really going to build something that means something.
Valenti Jordan says that with recent consumer trends and the need for domestic consumption, this is a good time to grow the Wisconsin organic foods industry. From the southern end of the world's longest barn, I'm Ben Jarbo.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. ProPublica is reporting an alleged $80,000 disclosure omission by Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem in her federal executive branch disclosure form, an ethics violation. Noem appears to have received a 2023 commission for fundraising for a dark money nonprofit group. ProPublica reporters reviewed 2023 documents suggesting a company Noem registered in Delaware, Ashwood Strategies LLC, took an apparent commission payment of $80,000 for raising money for the American Resolve Policy Fund, a 501c3 nonprofit. Noem did not report the payment on her Executive Branch Personnel Public Financial Disclosure Report filed late last year. Reporting found American Resolve was registered within minutes of the registration of Ashwood Strategies. On paper, American Resolve is registered and managed by a Virginia company, Sage Advisory Group. ProPublica also reports that American Resolve Policy Fund in turn formed America Resolve PAC, supporting Noem in its advertising. In a press statement, Noem's lawyer claims she did not, quote, establish, finance, maintain, or control American Resolve Policy Fund. She was simply a vendor for a nonprofit entity, unquote. She was also serving as governor at the time. We've linked to Noem's federal disclosure form, the ProPublica report, and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allbald Show.
Maggie Dawn.
Next up, you'll hear Matt Rothschild in the guest host chair helping you and your family gear up for a big July 4th weekend. He's got thoughts, and I want to hear them. So do you. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Glenn catches up with Cranberry Extension Specialist Allison Jonjack about this year's growing conditions so far. Allison also tells us what's ideal for the cranberries moving ahead.
Seen peak bloom and kind of moving on through the blossom into fruit set season. And we're seeing so far this year, surprisingly low insect pressure. We're also seeing a really good blossom set, but we are seeing weather conditions that aren't the pollinators' very favorite weather conditions. So we're hopeful that our pollinators are getting enough work done despite the uncooperative weather for them.
So I'm assuming that uncooperative weather you're talking about has been this influx of heat and rain. Is that a correct assumption?
Yes, that is true. Cranberries are typically pollinated either by native pollinators, by bumblebees, or by honeybees, and all three of those have a preference to work on the same days that humans would call a beautiful kind of partly cloudy day with light breeze, or sunny with light breeze and not overwhelming in any direction. And the surprise thunderstorms and the high humidity are not our pollinators' favorite conditions.
So you also mentioned that there is a relatively low insect pressure right now. Why is that?
We are unable to say with certainty why there aren't so many insects, other than possibly chalking it up to kind of similar weather. We're mostly cranberry growers are very attuned to what's going on in their beds, and they do, you know, weekly scouting. So we'll go out with, you know, looks like butterfly nets, but we'll go out and take sweeps and check for the presence of the Lepidoptera caterpillars that are the main pests for this time of year. And we'll count the caterpillars that are found in those nets. And we're just really pleased to see that there aren't very many this year to give us pressure. And it's really difficult to say. It's always, of course, 400 different factors that all play into that. But when we see low pressures, we say, well, thank goodness. And then we just keep monitoring and get to put our efforts elsewhere, and other than into having to control those insects.
When you look at one cranberry plant's life cycle, when is maybe the most important time to have ideal weather?
That's a great question. And the answer is going to be different if you were thinking in the 1850s or 1820s, when cranberries were just a wild plant here and weren't being commercially grown, then to have a good crop, you would hope to have no, or like a mild spring where there's not as many dips between hot weather and then cold nights and hot weather and cold nights. But that was before we had growers to tend the marshes and before we had the ability to flood or sprinkle to do frost protection. But now that we have control over that, the most, the place where weather has the biggest impact on a given growing cycle is going to be during the, during the July, August fruit growth period and when it's setting next year's bud.
So we're going into that July and August kind of time frame right now. What's the weather that you're hoping for?
We're going to hope, honestly, cranberries really kind of enjoy the same weather that humans enjoy. We would love to see not sweltering hot, but not too cold, just those nice 80s and 90s days with good sun availability. The plants love to photosynthesize in full sun. And so if you're having a nice day when you want to go to the lake, the cranberries are real happy as well.
Well, I didn't know that I had so much in common with a cranberry plant. So that's very interesting. Are there any ways that we can enjoy cranberries here over our holiday weekend or the 4th that we maybe don't think about?
I actually just added some cranberry sauce to the peach crisp that I made last night. The peaches are in their peak season, but the tang of cranberries went really well with the peach crisp. And I think everyone has their own standard recipe for that. But just the fresh fruit and the oats, brown sugar, flour, and a little bit of nutmeg crumbled up topping. But just put about a half a cup or three quarters of a cup of cranberry sauce in that pan there. And that I was really pleased with that. And of course, always we do like to support if you, in addition to cranberries,
picking up honey from local suppliers as well helps support the beekeepers too.
Allison Johnjack, the Cranberry Outreach Extension Specialist, hoping this 4th of July brings the best weather for both our cranberries and the lake goers. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Kylie Allen.
Thank you, Kylie. And hey, don't forget to tell us how the weather is shaping up for you this 4th of July holiday weekend. Just send us a text at 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. Stick around. Cody Koster joins us live from Everegg later this morning. We've also got a story to share with you from one of the first fairs.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on Civic Media Radio. We now take you to a recent Darren Von Ruden appearance on Matinee Air on Air.
We did want to start off with this, and this is from Lucas Hunt, a Civic Media news reporter.
Nice.
On our Civic Media website, U.S. Representative Derek Van Orden made an appearance at a cheese plant last Thursday, where he voiced support for the Trump administration tariffs. I'm just wondering if you happen to be in that audience, Darren, is it, or did folks you know talk about this?
No, I was not present for that event, but I have heard a few different comments from some of the individuals that were either there or seeing press releases of it.
And what have you heard from folks?
Well, not necessarily happy. The tariffs are something that's really turned this country around, and not necessarily in a good way. It's short-term gain, but I think there's going to be a lot of long-term effects from it that are not going to be on the positive side. So how do we, go about doing our business when we're not sure if we're going to have a market 6 weeks or 2 years from now?
And I'm sure that Derek Van Orden had all kinds of specifics about what he's going to do. Oh, wait, no, that's probably not what happened.
Yeah, it seems pretty vague. And certainly looking at this big, beautiful bill that's being talked about in D.C. right now, he said that he's going to protect the nutrition title of the farm bill to the last extent, which means that he should be voting no on that bill. He voted yes on it because there's $230 billion that's going to be cut from it over the next 10 years. So how is that helping the people that are in most need, which at one point in time in his life, he was one of those people?
That's something he was, we have on video and we played it on various shows. And he not only made a very, very impassioned argument for protecting specifically SNAP. He was talking about SNAP benefits, but he also, accuse the Democrats of lying. And to me, this is a not Democrat or Republican issue. This is a helping people issue. And that SNAP benefit issue is within the farm bill, if I'm not mistaken. Correct, Darren?
That is correct. That's where it's at. And, currently there's 160 plus Republicans that are trying to separate the SNAP title or the nutrition title from the farm bill and trying to make it a farm specific and a nutrition specific bills. Which is not good because food and agriculture are all in one, and so let's keep them together.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matinee Air on Air.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Another congressional all-nighter. This time, it's the House's turn to stay up debating the massive spending bill President Trump has told Republican leader he wants passed by the 4th of July, despite no Democratic support from lawmakers like Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
This disgusting abomination, the GOP tax scam that guts Medicaid, rips food from the mouths of children, seniors, and veterans, and rewards billionaires with massive tax breaks.
Republicans say the bill only targets waste and fraud, the Congressional Budget Office predicting it will add trillions to the national debt over the next decade. Guilty plea for Brian Koberger, who changed his plea and admitted in court he killed four University of Idaho students 2.5 years ago. He'll get life in prison. Sean Combs ordered held without bail in his sentencing after his conviction on two lesser charges in his trial. This is ABC News.
The Bucks release another player. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, Basketball, the Bucks have waived backup center Chris Livingston after just 2 years with the team. Livingston, drafted by the Bucks in 2023, and was the highest paid player taken in the second round of the NBA draft. The move seen as a way for the team to get under the salary cap. Baseball, the Brewers face the Mets tonight in New York with a series win on the line. Last night, the Crew lost to the Mets 7-3 after rookie Jacob Mizorowski gave up a grand slam in the second inning. Manager Pat Murphy.
He learned his lesson. He's ticked about it. Even some of his sequencing he's ticked about. He's just really in a good spot in that, darn it, why did this happen? You know what I mean? Like, I could have. And it's like, he can see it. There's just a really fine line between being dominant and being just okay. And I'm certain he'll learn from it.
The Brewers won game one of yesterday's doubleheader, 7-2. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we continue our discussion about funding childcare with Trisha Peterson. We talk sports in hour number two with Paul Noonan from the Acme Packing Company. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on the Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Any showers and storms ending. We'll see mostly clear to partly cloudy skies, but some patchy fog will be forming. Light winds at morning lows in the upper 50s. After the foggy start, we'll see quite a bit of sunshine with highs in the low to mid 80s. It's 66 at our studios.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Here's a clip from a recent edition of the Todd Albus Show, where Todd sat down with Alex Modersky from the Nature Conservancy talking conservation in Wisconsin.
We're joined to talk about other conservation issues by Alex Modersky, the Associate Director of Government Relations at the Nature Conservancy. Alex, before the break, introduced a little bit the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Fund, former Republican Governor Warren Knowles, former Democratic Governor and U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson, who started and founded Earth Day. What does this program mean for the state of Wisconsin, and why does it appear to be, if not in danger, certainly a concern right now as we look at the current budget process in Wisconsin?
Well, it means everything. It means a lot. I was thinking about this interview, Todd, today before I joined you to chat. And when we talk about the outdoors, it does everything from protect wildlife species to protect wetlands. It also, for local units of government, does things like create trails, creates parks, helps protect them. You're on a boat launch today. There's a whole sub-program of this Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program that's dedicated to making sure boaters can enjoy that activity. And every acre of land we have at the Nature Conservancy based on this program is open to all nature-based outdoor activities, as we call them, including hunting, fishing, and trapping. And those are such an important part of our state's cultural heritage that I'm glad we can offer that to every Wisconsinite and everyone who wants to visit this state for free. It's a public-private matching grant program, so we don't get this money for free from the state government. We got to show up at the table and explain to the Department of Natural Resources, here's what we think we can do, here's what we think we can protect, and here's what we think people can use. So here's the money we can bring to the table. Can you help us out? The program, I think, is not unique in facing some challenges in the legislature to the extent that that process doesn't always move as smoothly as perhaps most Wisconsinites would ideally like, but that's one reason we continue to go back to the legislature and tout these polls that say 93% of Wisconsinites support the stewardship program.
You've been listening to a portion of the Todd Alba Show. To learn more and to subscribe to the show's podcast, check out the Civic Media website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Are you just a casual observer?
Yeah.
Thursday morning. I'm Stephanie Hoff along with you here on the Midwest Farm Report. Big news in the wee hours of the morning. Governor Tony Evers signs the state budget. Assembly Agriculture Committee Chair Travis Tranel calls the compromise a good, forward-looking budget that supports economic growth while delivering for farmers, small businesses, and rural communities. I'll give you a sample of what's in there. It includes $150 million for the Agricultural Road Improvement Program, $800,000 in dairy processor grants, $1 million for meat processor expansion, ongoing investment in mental health services for farmers, and increased funding for cover crop programs, nitrogen optimization, and watershed partnerships. We'll have more coverage in the coming weeks on what the state budget means for rural Wisconsin. Today is going to be a good day to get on the road early before the 4th of July traffic. I imagine it's going to be me and a lot of Illinois license plates traveling north this weekend. The Farmer's Almanac doesn't say much about traveling today, but boy, does it have a lengthy to-do list for the holiday weekend. For those of you who have caught me on the morning show before, you know I like to take a look at the astrology section in the old Farmer's Almanac. Astrology is a tool that the almanac uses to plan events based on the sun, moon, constellations, and planets. Take it with a grain of salt. Today does mark the beginning of the dog days of summer. The dog days end August 11th, so these next 40 days are traditionally the year's hottest. The book also says it's a good day to get married. That's about it for today, but tomorrow the list is lengthier. Here's a few examples of what you should be doing on the 4th, according to the old Farmer's Almanac. Buy a house, advertise to sell, mow the lawn or mow hay to promote growth, breed animals, and brew. I suppose they mean brew beer, or maybe they mean watch the Brewers take on the Marlins tomorrow evening. A few options for you there. In other news this morning, county fair season is upon us. I'm sure a few of you have plans to attend a fair in the near future. Our own Aubrey Schlimgen spent the day at the Stoughton Fair.
Aubrey Schlimgen with the Midwest Farm Report here at the annual Stoughton Fair in Stoughton, Wisconsin, talking to Joe Conant, who is the director of Stoughton Fair. Thank you, Joe, for talking to me. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do here with Stoughton Fair.
Well, I'm one of the many directors. We have a great fair board. And basically, I do whatever I'm told to right now, whether it be setting up fencing, whether helping anybody out at the fair. So it's a really a great fair. It's a free fair, meaning you can come here on the grounds. Of course, the rides aren't free or our paid events aren't free, but we have a lot of great things going on at our fair this year.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the great things that are happening at the fair this week?
Oh, well, like tonight we have monster trucks. Well, you're going to miss that. We have the CC Bucking Bulls coming in on Thursday. And then we also have the two music events in our grandstands. And we also have a beer garden, our second year having a beer garden. So it's going to work out good.
Absolutely. And could you talk a little bit about what are the exhibitor aspect looking like this year in terms of, is it looking like numbers are up? And what is that impact looking like this year in terms of exhibitors?
Well, on the animal side, the numbers are always steady. They always seem to increase, you know, decent amount. The ones that's kind of concerning is the inside exhibits, meaning like your 4-H projects, which would be like the woodworking, the cooking, the sewing, the crop growth. Those numbers have always been going down, and that's the only Debbie Downer side of our fair is that I wish we had more youth doing more things with their hands other than on their phones or tablets or whatever it may be.
Absolutely. And it seems like the exhibitor side when it comes to animals and livestock has increased throughout the years. What improvements have you guys made in recent years to kind of help, you know, cater to that? And then maybe what are you hoping to help cater to in terms of numbers going down in the smaller exhibits?
Well, as far as the animal growth, that goes back and forth, but it always seems to have like a steady growth. We're never like, where's the animals at? As far as the barns go, I mean, we have dated barns, but we are really excited about major improvements coming down very soon. And that's going to be a surprise to everybody what we got going there. On the inside, I mean, we got great 4-H groups around in our county. And a lot, you know, in same with Rock and Green that show up. But it's it is nice seeing it. But like I said before, it'd be nice if those numbers improved.
Last year, Stoughton Fair kind of was experiencing some obstacles. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the positivity that it's sounding like you guys are experiencing this year and working with the city and the improvements that Stoughton Fair has now seen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you talked to me, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. It was I got a lot of gray hair talking as far as working with the city that was not, I'm not going to say they were against us, but they weren't, we weren't working together. And it seems as of late, this has been just an absolute dream of working with the city that's pro our fair, wants to see us succeed. They worked with our grounds. And when you come here this year, you're going to see it's a lot different. It's a lot different than it was last year.
Absolutely. And what are some of those differences that you can point out to us right now that if people come to Stoughton Fair that they will see?
Well, the roadway is definitely different. You still come in the same way and leave the same way this year. Next year, that's going to change, but we can talk about that another time. The grandstands are moved. We have more parking, I believe, than we ever had. It's just it's hard to explain, but it's a positive improvement.
Absolutely. And then what is the outlook for the future then with Stoughton Fair from improvements here on out?
Well, next year's our 100th year, and like I said, we want to unveil the big plan for our future. Yeah, so I want to be here another 100 years.
Talking about next year being the grand 100 year, what is maybe some advice or maybe that something you wished the public knew about a fair like Stoughton being around, a small fair, a free fair being around for almost 100 years?
Well, it's just the people that come to our fair, the exhibitors, the families, the safe environment that we have down here. There's more positives than negatives. I don't know what more to say other than it's a great fair. A lot of great people here, a lot of people volunteering. When they say volunteerism is gone, I don't believe it. If you come down here, you'll see everybody's volunteering. It doesn't matter if you're working in the commissary or you're helping somebody with their pig project or their steer or everybody's helping one another out. And it's really a neat thing to see.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Joe. That was Joe Conant, one of the many directors here at the Stoughton Fair, celebrating their 99th year. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Aubrey Schlumgen.
Thank you, Aubrey, for the update and highlighting one of the many community and county fairs coming to Wisconsin this summer. If you want to find a list of all the fairs happening across the state, visit wifairs.com and click on their events link. After the break, we'll take a look at a niche market that can help people who are sensitive to dairy drink milk. That's before Cody Koster joins us live. Don't go anywhere.
Keeping Wisconsin strong.
When a company only does business in Wisconsin, that's Wisconsin Strong. Rural Mutual provides all lines of insurance, including commercial, farm, home, and auto. And your premiums stay right here to keep Wisconsin strong. Local agents, local underwriters, local claims adjusters.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Hey, got yield? The Wisconsin Soybean Association is excited to announce the 2025 Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. Highlighting the innovative production practices of Wisconsin soybean growers, the Yield Contest celebrates soybean growers across the state and their dedication to improving their operations. Two winners will be selected from 4 geographical divisions, with additional awards available. Entry forms must be postmarked by August 31st, so don't wait. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
A niche market could provide more value to smaller dairy operations while also allowing more people to drink milk and eat cheese. Farm Director Pam Yonke has the story this morning.
Every day, people are coming up with great ideas, but how practical are they, and can they even be put into place? That's the question that ran through Lonnie Holthouse's mind in Fenimore, Wisconsin, when his college son came back to the dairy farm and suggested that they take a deeper look at A2 milk that their dairy cows were producing and a possible new market for consumers that find themselves intolerant of dairy. Holthouse says it's been an educational process for both them as dairy producers and consumers ever since.
The more I read, it was like, oh my God, there's something here. But we still didn't trust it. So we DNA tested, found enough cows to actually make cheese. And we had a small little cheese plant make a batch of cheese for us. And we started handing it out to people that we knew that had dairy issues. And every single one of them went, oh my God, this works. And it was looked at my son and my wife, and I go, I think we're on to something here.
From those simple giveaway samples, today Milk House Dairy is circulating A2 protein cheese to markets around Wisconsin as well as Iowa. And even after Lonnie Holthouse has gone through product development, genomic testing of his dairy herd to make sure they're producing A2 protein milk, the education continues. He said one of the greatest challenges he faces is making sure that vendors, retailers give A2 milk protein a chance in the store and that they try to win back those dairy consumers that would otherwise only think of a sick stomach.
When we do demos at cheese places, the people that walk up to us are people who already can have cheese. The ones that walk away from us and avoid us, they're the ones I need to be talking to. And I put a seminar on for a big grocery chain in Minneapolis. And I told them, I said, every person that walks through that front door that can't have cheese is not walking to the dairy case. And you're missing out on 50% of your customers because they have no reason to go there because they don't think they can have anything.
Well, now they can. Again, Lonnie Holthouse, dairy producer and entrepreneur in Fenimore. I'm Pam Yonke.
Thank you, Pam. Don't forget, we've got Cody Koster joining us from EverEgg in just a moment. Before he calls in, let's take a look at markets this morning. Ethanol production is chewing up corn supply, which has been a bright spot for that old crop price. From Chicago, cash corn is trading up 4¾ cents at 4.22¾. December new crop corn is trading up a nickel and a half at 4.39 a bushel. Soybeans continue to be trading a little higher after a rally yesterday. Cash beans are up 2¼ cents at 10.55¾. November new crop soybeans are up a penny and three quarters at 10.49¾. And new crop wheat is up 0.75 cents at 5.64¾. Cheese is going to be a big part of our conversation with Cody this morning. The 40-pound block cheese saw a big rally on Monday, trading up 10 cents. On the close yesterday, the 40-pound block was down 4¾ cents at $1.67½.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
In sitcoms, when someone has a problem, they just blurt it out and move on.
Well, I lost my job and my parakeet is missing. How was your day?
But the real world is different. Managing life's challenges can be overwhelming. So, what do? We get support. The Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council have mental health resources available for you at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. See how much further you can go when you take care of your mental health.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Years ago, I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me, and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, like,
sure you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wear sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen my curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Dan Schaefer, political editor at Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulation Area, will be here to update us live on the latest of the state budget and another holiday edition of What's Worse. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
That's not the case for milk production, is it?
No, it is not. I appreciate you having me on this morning, Stephanie. And it is hot here in Michigan, 6:50 in the morning. And my phone already says it's 83 degrees. So it has been a scorcher.
And that's something that is reflected often in the milk production report.
It is. I've been talking to folks this week. You know, we started out, I'd say 2 weeks ago, people were calling in saying they were down 10 to 15 pounds in the last 3 days. Where we have been in the low 90s here in the Midwest, in a lot of the parts, I've had folks call in, tell me they are down 20 to 23 pounds a cow. And if you look going forward for the next 4 days, at least here in Michigan, we are 92 on Friday, 93 on Saturday, 93 on Sunday. It is going to be a hot stretch. And the problem is we are not cooling down at night. So fans are running 24/7. The cows are not catching up and the feed is just not getting the intake that it usually does because it is so hot and muggy out right now.
And is it the upper Midwest that's going to be hit the worst here?
I think right now it's going to be the upper Midwest. I mean, talking to folks on the West Coast, they've actually had a fantastic start to the summer. They have lower temps than we do right now in parts of Washington, Idaho, and California. Now California is going to heat up into the triple digits this weekend, but they're kind of used to it, right? They're built for it. They've got the infrastructure for it out there. They've got sprinklers, misters and all that kind of stuff. But the upper Midwest, I believe, is going to be the one that's getting hit the hardest in the foreseeable future. Definitely the ones that are getting hit the hardest right now.
Yeah, as we're out enjoying the holiday, know that dairy farmers are watching their cows very closely. Cody, I know cheese is the bulk of what you want our conversation to be about today. But before we move on to cheese, any other notes about milk supply that we should know about?
No, I think it's going to be a little bit of a tight milk supply going forward in the next couple of weeks here. There's already some cheese companies that have kind of made note that they are starting to see the intakes start to diminish as of this past week, honestly.
Well, on the cheese front, we saw a pretty significant rally to start the week that didn't continue all the way to the close yesterday. But what are you seeing there? What's happening with cheese sales in the global market?
Yeah, we had our Monday on the CME. We had a very massive rally for cheese in class three. We had global dairy trade was Tuesday. And if you look at their cheddar cheese price, they're at $2.20 equivalent a pound. If you look at mozzarella, they're at $2.18. Our block price as of yesterday, $1.67.5. So compare that to mozzarella. We are still 50 cents lesser than the rest of the world. And I know we've talked about it before. I talked about it with Pam last time I was on here. We have done this song and dance for the last, 12 months, where we go from $1.60 cheese to $1.95 cheese, and we trade this range anywhere in between. We've been there, like I said, since last year, and it seems like we are going to continue to do this. The exports started to flock out of the United States 3 weeks ago when we dropped to $1.60. And I'll be honest, if we do it again today, if we get close to $1.60, maybe $1.62, expect those exports to really get pushed out of this country, because you can't be 50 cents discount to the rest of the world and not have people come knocking on your door.
So as you said, you don't think that dance card is going to change at all?
Right now, I don't. Right. I don't see us dropping below $1.60 just because you're going to get the export numbers. The only way that we drop below $1.60 is if Europe has a massive problem and their cheese price really starts falling apart. But anything over $1.95, you got to ask yourself, where is this newfound demand going to come from? We have not found that yet. Every time we get up there, I think it was 3-4 times in the past 12 months, we've hit $1.95. We have blatantly come off the very following day and just gone right back to $1.60. And I just don't know where that new demand is going to come from. So until something in the world changes, I think we're just kind of range bound in there. And I say range bound where $1.60 to $1.95 is nothing to scoff at. But when you start getting up into those higher tiers of the range towards $1.95, $2, as a dairy producer, we're going to want to look at hedging that going farther out, because when you fall to $1.60, everyone sees what happens.
And Cody, they can get in touch with you at ever.ag. Thanks for joining us this morning. We'll catch you again next week. Happy Independence Day, everyone. We'll catch you back here again Monday morning.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on the Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 W, Highway 63, Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
Cattle industry is tackling greenhouse gas emissions head-on, as you'll hear today on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. Beef and dairy producers are actively pursuing ways to trim their carbon footprint. In a recent U.S. Farmers and Ranchers in Action webinar, Extension Specialist Logan Thompson of Kansas State University tallied the ways livestock producers are implementing offsets.
Anaerobic digesters are a really promising tool to reduce emissions. Depending on adoption rates and where you are climatically, that impacts what kind of digester is going to work for you. But you can see greenhouse gas emission reductions over 50%. And then you also get the benefit of providing renewable energy, most commonly into the California Green Energy Program. This is a tailor-made solution. It just needs to become more economically advantageous and get more and more early adopters.
The Valley View Dairy near Brookings, South Dakota uses a manure digester, and Michael Crinion is the manager there.
All farmers that I know of always want to leave their operation better than they received it. There is a lot of opportunities for farmers to sequester a lot of carbon, but they have to be properly compensated for that. So all types of sustainability has to start with financial sustainability for the farmer first.
There's a link to a recording of the webinar on the show info page at NorthShoreProductions.com. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, I put another candle on the old birthday cake, and I do mean old. Plus Sherita Booker, Chad Holmes, Todd Alba, and Sean O'Malley.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
Let's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the Founding Fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we are still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A vote is expected shortly in the House of Representatives on the budget bill President Trump and the Republicans say will stimulate the U.S. economy and make America safer, and Democrats say will grow the deficit by providing tax cuts mostly to the wealthy and by gutting Medicaid. Recent Premier League soccer champion Liverpool Football Club suffering the loss of one of its top players, Diogo Jota, killed in a car crash in Spain along with his younger brother. Both Jota and his brother also played for Portugal's national team. Sean Diddy Combs is still behind bars this morning, the judge in his case refusing to grant bail after he was convicted, but of lesser charges in the sex trafficking case. Outside the courthouse, this supporter says,
I always felt like they had, you know, a lot of bogus charges against him. Maybe some were substantiated, others weren't. And I feel like he got rightfully his just due today.
The judge did agree to possibly move Combs' sentencing up. This is ABC News.